Moving on to our work session. Okay, City of Avondale Estates, Georgia, Board of Commissioners work session. It's May 24th, 2023. It's now
5:50.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. We have an agenda before us. Do I have a motion to adopt?
So moved.
That was Lisa. Do I have a second?
Second.
That was D. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Item number three, Clarendon Avenue, July 4th, street painting. All right. Just who is here to comment on that? Okay. Anybody over there? Okay. Who's in favor of it? Okay. Who's not in favor of it? Okay. All right. So, no, not yet. No, not till the end. Okay. So Lionel is for it. Me and Lisa are against it. Brian, who is not here, he's out of town. I've talked to him. He is for it. So that kind of looks like it's me. My problem with the street painting is it's simply gotten out of control. You know, it's turned into this free-for-all, and what started out as Boy Scouts and their dads stenciling stars on the street has turned into everything. You know, flags painted on the street, which Mr.
Stanton
has, you know, come very kindly here many times and stated his objection to, and I don't blame him. You know, all manner of stuff's getting painted on the street. They're starting to show up on phone poles and the curb, on manhole covers, which we, by the way, do we own those? I don't think we do. It's just gotten a lot of control. It's interfering, in my opinion, with some, you know, traffic striping and stuff. And they're using spray paint, which they've been using for years. We used chalk paint 1 year and that seemed to work okay, but then people just painted over it the next year with spray paint and it just sat there. And we just got our nice, we just got a nice new shiny road. I know it's not shiny, you know what I mean? And we paid a lot of money for it. They did a great job. I mean, I almost hate to see new striping at all go on it, but we need striping for traffic control and whatnot. You know, it's a lot of money. It looks great. We have a beautiful neighborhood. And, you know, the street is just looking janky. I don't really know a better word for it. So you drive through a beautiful city and you see the street that looks like, I don't know, graffiti central. It just doesn't look good. So, and we've gotten quite a few emails about this, more than usual on a topic. I will tell you, my kids and I have participated in this. They had a blast. You know, we were using stencils. There was some sort of freeform, but there were stencils. I don't know what happened to them. I think they've just kind of run out of, they fell apart, I think, actually. They were quite old and been painted over a million times. And anyway, so how about this? I have an idea. I thought about this a lot. I'd like to just propose something. And we're not necessarily voting on it, but if we can agree to these conditions, chalk paint only, number one. Number two, stencils only, no flags. Stencils only, preferably stars. Let's just go back to what we had the first time, okay? Chalk paint only, stencils only. Someone from the board supervises this. That'll probably be me or Brian, that's fine. I think we'll gladly do it. I would. This year, the 4th is on a Tuesday. We could do it on a Sunday. And condition number four, you know, don't paint near the images. Don't paint down the center. Don't paint in the intersections. Just down the middle of the lane from Wiltshire to whatever. What's the
North
Carolina? And, you know, nothing on the phone poles, nothing on the curb, no, you know, nothing on the manhole covers, which again, we don't own. How about that? Chalk paint, stencils, supervised. Down the middle of the lanes. Yes.
I have a concern about the chalk paint. I feel like when you have the people out there spraying, it's very hard to determine whether at the time, whether it's chalk paint or permanent paint. I would be preferred that if we're going to do it, we use the sidewalk chalk that will not, will be a little bit easier to come off and easier to manage. I have every year since I've been on the board, this has come up as an issue. I voted, I know at least two, maybe three times for the city to provide chalk paint, spray paint, and folks who have been done the painting have not respected the fact that we requested chalk paint and provided the chalk paint to them. So I would like some new traditions. I think putting flags, putting banners along the road, things that the folks that put them up would be responsible for taking them back down. I think there are many ways to celebrate this without having the risk of something that has become increasingly unmanageable over time. So.
Well, I guess I should add, the city buys the chalk paint, okay? This is why I want a board member there. If anybody shows up with a can of spray paint, I'm going to spray paint them. Okay. That happened to a friend of mine. It actually worked. He never did it again.
Yeah, I have some comments too, Jonathan.
But that's an idea. Okay. Because I think it is a cool tradition. I think it started out great. I think it's just gotten out of control. I know a lot of people hate to see it. Completely die. I'm trying to find something in the middle here.
And I am too. And that's why I suggest, things that aren't marking the streets, that can be done to make our streets more festive, but mm-hmm. that clearly don't have the chance of evolving into something that becomes more permanent that we've been experiencing. So I think Lisa wants to say something.
Well, and I have all the same things jotted down, Jonathan, that you spoke about, the history about it morphing. I think natural beauty is something that defines Avondale Estate. It's something in our planning documents and our comprehensive plan. We ask people to maintain their verges. People are proud of their yards and beautify their yards. And frankly, I sympathize with residents on Clarendon who do that. And then have something that looks, as you said, janky when they look out of their window at their beautiful yard. Mm-hmm. I understand the feeling of something as a tradition and, community spirit and all of that. But I do have to ask, what is the trade-off here? One day of fun for those people, many of whom don't live on Clarendon, something that other people have to look at the whole time. Now, that being said, my other big concern, and I'll get to what your proposal in a second. My other big concern is just how do we distinguish any other kinds of graffiti from what's on the street? Now, your proposal would do that by providing stencils and making sure it was chalk paint. I think it's really putting ourselves in a very bad position where we are right now. If someone does come along who's, doing something other than 4th of July, because I think the way the street looks now, it's, a precedent and maybe even an encouragement, or the way the street looked before it was repaved. Your proposal would set my mind at ease on that, because you could distinguish mm-hmm. between the stenciled stars, is what I would prefer, that we just have stenciled stars, and free form graffiti. I am willing to try that compromise. I have deep concerns based on what has happened over the last few years, because we did try to compromise and the fact was that people took it into their own hands to say, well, we don't care what the board said. We're just going to do what we want to do because we want to do it. And I'm concerned that that's what's going to happen again. And we have this beautiful new street, and all it takes is one idiot. It only takes one idiot to mess it up. And so, Jonathan, I'm leaning toward the compromise that you mentioned, but I am like, if this happens again,
then we shut it down.
The other concern is, somebody's going to have to supervise this. So a board member is going to have to supervise. So what happens when a board member, one year when a board members don't want to do that or aren't available to do that? How do we deal with that?
All right. Let me get some comments in here.
Okay.
Has anyone here spoken to the organizers of this event?
Not yet.
Okay. I have.
Mm-hmm.
The organizers have proposed, and you know what, I'll get to their proposal in a minute. But first, I want to address everyone, both Po and Khan, who wrote in. And the thing that impressed me about the emails, both Po and Khan, is that I only read two, I think, maybe three, against this, in which they did not propose a compromise. And I'm happy that that's the way the emails read. Everyone proposed something, but even those who didn't think it should happen at all proposed something. And that's what I want to impress upon here, because upon the board and the rest of the public, is that it's not a zero-sum game. It's not you don't do it. We're going to shut down something that's been going on. It's more than 20 years. It's probably 40 years from the folks that I talked to. Well, either way, it's more than 20 years. The fact is, you don't just say no to a tradition like that. You know, people get out there. I've been out there. Mayor's been out there. A lot of people have been out there. And it's part of who we are. It's part of our characteristic. It's a characteristic of this city, you know. So I don't think saying no is something that's really the way to go here. The second thing I'd like to address about this is that at the strategic planning meeting, we spent a half an hour talking about how residents, if they want events, should do events. And here are residents putting themselves out there and doing something that's been going on for a long time. Okay, I don't know whether it's 20 or 40, but I know it's been going on for a long time. And now we, you know, what I heard was, you know, we got to shut this down. You know, I mean, that's sort of, you know, let's try to be consistent with this. The third thing that I want to bring up is you used the word that I wrote down here, Commissioner Shortell. Trade-off, you know. We have seen a lot of growth in the city. We intend on having more growth in the city. Is the trade-off our traditions? I mean, is the increased professionalism of the city, the loss of the things that made this place unique, the things that actually made it say that this is Avondale Estates? I don't think that's a good trade-off. I mean, there are plenty of things. There are plenty of other things that I wish we still had when I first moved here 15 years ago that we don't have now. We used to have a fishing derby. I wish we still had that going on, you know, but we don't. Okay. I mean, time passes, yes, but I don't think tradition should be erased because, you know, there's something wrong. So let me come to this this compromise thing. I have talked to the organizers of this event, and they pretty much came back to me with pretty much the same compromise you had there, except for supervision by the supervisors, by the BOMC. But they dropped off a stencil at my house today, and it's just stars. And this is what they wanted me to bring to the board. It's in my car if anybody wants to see it, but it is stars. You know, they proposed the chalk paint, and they propose, you know, if the city doesn't want to pay for it, the city doesn't have to pay for it. We'll do it ourselves. You know, it's that important to folks, you know. So, you know, what I would say, you know, to my fellow board members, the city manager, the public, is that, you know, we do live in a beautiful place. We do great things in this beautiful place. But the important word about it is community. I hear a lot of I. It ain't I, you know. It's about community and the things that bind communities together are traditions. You know, there are traditions I don't like, but, you know, I see their function, and I see that they bring people together. So, you know, I would never advocate against, I would never advocate for shutting them down. So what I'll say is this, just to wrap it up, is that, you know, this is obviously, you know, I don't think I've seen as many emails coming about a subject since we had the Trammell Crow thing happening. But, you know, I think it shows the gravity and the how important it is for people. I wasn't keeping count, but I think I saw more emails than Khan. But again, what's important is that both sides are willing to compromise, and it's not a zero-sum proposition. And that's what I think the lesson to take away from this is. Members of the BLMC want to go out and supervise. You know, my view, these guys are all professionals. They're all, you know, grown-ups. They don't need supervision. I think that with the proper leadership out there, they can go out and say, guys, we're going to do this. These are the ground rules. These are the constraints. Let's follow them. Let's make it happen. And I believe they believe in the city enough that they would follow that.
So, Jonathan, I do appreciate your compromise. I want to be perfectly clear. I am not against people organizing to delegate, to decorate and to celebrate our 4th of July and decorate along the street even for the 4th of July. My concern is that we have tried repeatedly to deal with the spray paint. So I'm zeroing in specifically on a very minor aspect of the street decorating. The using spray paint on the street is my problem. I think there are many, many other ways to have kids out there having a good time, to do a decoration that celebrates the 4th, that celebrates our city, that has that opportunity for community interaction without using spray paint. So that's I'm concerned about.
It's only chalk paint. Did you look into how much it costs, where we get it, how long does it take to get?
Yeah.
Okay.
We bought it the previous 3 years.
Okay.
It's about $800-$850, right? We can get it all in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
That's not an issue. A couple of things I do want to bring to y'all's attention. Just in case, you know, there's kind of three, if spray painting, not chalk paint, but if spray painting were to occur, and y'all wanted it removed. I can't recall which commissioner asked for this information, but we obtained it. You know, there's three things we could do to kind of eliminate permanent graffiti. One is to try and use a standard pressure washer to get it off. That is usually not a viable solution unless you catch it very quickly and are able to remove it when it's still wet. Two, you can paint over it. Of course, if you paint over it, then you're going to have discoloration of the roadway because the paint's not going to match the asphalt color. We also contacted a service who will remove permanent graffiti from asphalt with a chemical solution. It's pricey. It's about $17,500, but that's the only way to guarantee that the asphalt remains uniform. Obviously, the chalk paint, if it is used in its entirety, it provides no issue because it is naturally washed away in the next storm. Just a little information for y'all to consider.
Thank you. Jonathan, I have one more comment.
Sure.
If you don't mind. Again, as I said, I'm willing to consider this compromise and see if it can work this time versus the last time we tried a middle of the road approach, which did not work. But I would also request, if this is truly a community tradition, I would request that that's something that's everyone's invited to, who wants to participate. Because right now, it appears to be a private invitation for the most part. And, you know, I mean, when we talk about that, people are saying, I think a lot of people have not been invited who may want to participate. It's been a particular group invitation.
I wasn't aware that it was a closed event.
It's not closed, Lionel, but you're not, people are getting private invitations. They're not, it's not a public invitation.
Okay.
So obviously you get people out in the street, so we'd need,
yeah.
you know, our police department to
yeah.
help out, which they have in the past, and say, okay, we're going to do this Sunday morning at 8.
Yeah.
I think we've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So by 10, you know, and anybody can come, do not bring your own paint. Right. We'll spy the paint.
Yeah. I'd like to make one more comment.
Yes.
This is about, you know, the flag. It's more for clarification than any, you know, action that we're supposed to take along those lines. Where what I've been told is that the stars is what they would like to do.
Right.
But on the flag, a flag painted on the ground is not a flag. I just want to make that clear. And I know this was of concern to you, sir, but a flag that's painted on the ground is not considered a flag. It's considered a depiction of the flag, but not the flag. What goes against the code of the flag is having clothing made out of the flag, which we see, you know, more often than not. The other interesting part about the flag is that the official flag of the United States has the field of stars on the top left corner. If you look at military uniforms, the flag that is on the patch on the right arm has the field of the flag on the opposite side. And the reason for that is that it's supposed to depict forward motion, where that field of the flag would be closest to the flagpole. And if it was blowing against the wind, it would be there. So that's why the flag is backwards on military uniforms. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, I appreciate that. It's just, you know, it started out as stars. Let's just go back to that. It's simple. Everybody's cool with that. No one gets upset. It just, you know, keep it under control. So to me, it's like, that's how it started. Let's go back to that. Right? If you want to talk about a tradition.
Yeah. Right? No, I don't think anybody's going to object.
So new here.
Well, I would love for the tradition to evolve to being more banners and flags that are just simply stuck along the roadside and not include decoration of the street. If it is decoration of the street, then I would much prefer that it simply use sidewalk chalk, not anything that is sprayed. I just think it's problematic when you start spraying.
Okay. Well, and I appreciate that. I just, you know, we've, like Lionel said, we've got more emails in favor of, you know, using chalk paint on the street. I'd be in favor of that. I think Lionel's in favor of that. Brian's in favor of that. I won't be here June 14th. I don't think we...
There's nothing to vote
on. Okay. Yeah. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I will give it one more shot.
Okay. I will volunteer to meet with the group, and we do need to open this up. We'll put it in the newsletter. Say anybody can show up. Don't bring your spray paint. We'll send you home and take it from there.
That sounds good to me.
All right. And if people would like to bring flags and plant them on the street, side of the street, not on the street, that's fine.
And so I do have one more question for the city manager. Is this something that would require a permit?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. We will need. What's that?
Do we need to pass a resolution, no spray paint on the street, or is that already included
under that's
graffiti, vandalism?
Yes.
Okay, because we had, I did have a comment from a resident saying, oh, there's no law against
it. There's no legislative action that needs to be taken. It's really just a conversation. If you
want to codify this, we can, but...
But it's already codified so that if some other person comes and spray paints on the street,
then they are subject to fines related to any graffiti violation.
Thank you for clarifying.
Huzzah. Hi. Are we good?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Well, just one more thing.
Nope, not till the end.
I do want to comment. as Lyle alluded to, there have been a lot of emails regarding this, and I would like to commend everyone who wrote in for respectful, proactive, cogent emails. They were very impressive, and I just want to thank everyone that sent emails in.
Yes, thank you. Let's rewrite that. Okay. All right, let's move on to item number four, sanitation services update. Mr. Manager.
Yes, this is in regards to a meeting the municipalities that still use the county's landfill services had with the county CEO's office to discuss the matter of the tipping, the potential of a tipping fee increase. That meeting was very productive. The CEO of the county, Zach Williams, explained the deficit that their sanitation program is running and the need to plug that deficit in order to continue with sanitation services. He also realized the impact that an increase in tipping fees would have on the three municipalities using the landfill. He also was empathetic to the need for municipalities to be able to plan around any tipping fee increase and could not just absorb a tipping fee increase on short notice. So while he believes that the matter needs to be addressed in the future, he is recommending to the board this week that the municipality tipping fee increase be not included in the other increases in fees associated with the DeKalb County sanitation program. However, he did want to put that back on the table for next year. So I would anticipate that the county and any municipalities who are still using their services for landfill will be engaged in some sort of conversation about how that can best be accomplished. I think the suggestion from Mr. Williams was more of a phased approach, but I did want the board to anticipate that in the future, those tipping fees will be increasing for the municipalities, most likely on a sliding on a phased scale rather than all at once. So they're easily to more absorb, but that those tipping fees will need to be increased so the county can actually fulfill the needs of its own program.
Any questions for
you? Yeah.
So as they work on creating this scale to increase the fees, are the city managers going to be involved in that?
Yes, and that we were all three a part of this discussion, mm-hmm. and we would all three be a part of working with the county to both work out a fee in enough time for each municipality to be able to set their annual fee and to work out a phasing program that would not impact all municipal residents at once.
Okay, but you haven't touched on any details just yet.
He wants to resume those conversations in the fall of this year, and they're going to move forward or propose to move forward. Of course, the county commission could choose to go in another direction, but the CEO's office is going to recommend against including those municipal tipping fee increases in this year's
right
package. Okay.
All right, thank you.
So we're basically on hold for a year with that.
With an expectation of those fees to increase in coming years.
But we will continue to have conversations about what we want to do in Avondale.
Correct. That's why I'm informing you of this, because I think that information will help you determine what the future of our own sanitation program will be.
Okay.
Can you possibly make a recommendation that the Board of Commissioners revisits this every 4 years instead of every 20 years? I mean, I think, you know, I'm a big incrementalist, if you will. It's like increase it every 4 years, but not double it every 20 years and
triple it
and put everybody in like this panic mode of, oh my God, we gotta, you know, yeah, it's, I don't think it's that big a deal, but if you could kindly make that suggestion, I would personally appreciate that.
And I believe the county, from the discussions we had, the county is empathetic to that concern.
Well, I realize they got a lot of stuff to deal with, but yeah, that's kind of dropping a bomb every 20 years that no one wants to deal with. So anyway, just a friendly suggestion. Okay. So, yes.
Just one more thing. So I just wanted to thank city staff for getting a very nice PowerPoint put together that when I did do a search for sanitation, that did pop up on it pretty easily. I was able to find it. The only thing that I would like to add, it's a very easy to follow presentation, so nicely done, but it does need another slide that has links to the BOMC meetings, because there have been at least three where this has been under discussion. So if the dates and links to those meetings could be added to the PowerPoint presentation so that somebody looking at it can find those easily, I'd appreciate it.
What do y'all think?
Is it easy to add?
Yeah, I responded to Commissioner Merriam's concern earlier that we anticipate next week to be adding content.
Yeah.
We're going to do a video presentation of that presentation and also have links back to the discussions that have already been had.
Yeah. I just want folks to be aware that that is coming. So thank you.
Yeah, I would like to add, because I've already posted it on my Facebook page and I got comments and input from people, which was great. But I think adding that other piece, Patrick, your presentation part, the oral presentation part, is going to really be helpful to folks understanding it. Thank you.
And Jonathan, I do think we discussed making sure that the links to those meetings be part of it at our last work session when this was discussed. So
you did?
Yeah, it's my memory.
So. I don't remember. Okay.
Well, like I said, we are doing that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Battle?
No, I'm good.
All good?
You're okay.
All right. Are we good?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Item number five, Historic Preservation Commission opening. Mr. Manager?
Yeah, so we have a vacancy on the Historic Preservation Commission and an applicant who has applied to fill that vacancy. Usually what we've done in the past is conduct an interview with any applicants who apply for any of our board vacancies. Since we have a singular applicant, the question is posed to the board as to whether or not y'all want to hold an interview, or would you like to, go ahead and move forward in the process to appoint, or would you like to continue to call for applications until we have multiple persons to interview for that open vacancy? The issue that I just want to bring to the board's attention is that, of course, if you keep a vacancy on a board for a lengthy period, you'll more than likely run into at least one instance where a quorum is going to be unable to be met. So just want to bring that to y'all's attention.
So how long has this been advertised up to this point?
Yeah, but all year.
So, I mean, frankly, I was unaware that there was this open slot. Where was it advertised?
I mean, remember when we did interviews for the other HPC position, which we filled at the end of last year, we declared that there was still a vacancy, and the board made the decision at that time to continue to advertise for that vacancy. Okay. And that's what we've done. So we've used our normal channels.
I would really like to, so just me personally, I would like to see it advertised at least for another month to give an opportunity and publicized in the e-news that there is the vacancy and ask for additional applicants.
We've been advertising this for a year.
Yeah, but I haven't seen it in the e-news. I wasn't aware that it was open.
It's been in the e-news.
Yeah.
Well, the person that applied knew about it. Is that person, is Dustin Gilliland here?
Yes.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Thank you for applying.
Yes, thank you.
Are you a sound mind and body? Do you know what you're doing?
Not
you do understand that there can be contentious
Are you able to say no?
Yes.
I do understand.
Yeah. I'm joking. I do appreciate you applauding, and your resume is impressive. And I did see that you were interested in a program earlier, just we're not able to do it. Historic program, I guess, at Georgia. My point of view or my opinion is we've been advertising for this for a year. We got one applicant. I think we should fill it. That is my 2 cents worth.
I have seen it advertised. I have seen it in the E! News. I'm fine not continuing to advertise. And I really appreciate folks who step up to volunteer so much. At the same time, I would like to ask a couple questions of the applicant. Sure. And because I feel like that's important to do with any of our applicants at mm-hmm. this point. We want to, you know, have good understanding of what folks are getting into and how they look at the Historic Commission. And I do have some questions. So I guess that means we should schedule an interview, or should I ask questions now?
Well, that's up to the board.
Question. So maybe because Jonathan's first question, which is, do we need to advertise it?
I would say to the board is that if you do choose to interview, I think it should probably be done at a different time so that all board members can be prepared to interview. And we also have a vacancy, an absence on the board tonight who wouldn't be able to participate in that process.
So that can't happen for 2 weeks.
Right.
It would be at the next meeting?
Correct.
Which I won't be at.
Is it possible?
Or what y'all done in the past, y'all did a special call where y'all.
Is it possible to just, to Dee's concern, is it possible to leave it open until that second meeting? Or
y'all can do whatever y'all want.
I mean, that's only 2 more weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to.
What would we ever say this? Well, I guess you can't really close it till someone applies.
Y'all could close it and interview a singular applicant.
I would prefer to do that. To close it, interview Mr. Gilliland at the next meeting, I suppose, although he's here now, but you point taken that Brian's not here. I won't be at the next one, but I'm fine with this. Y'all want to do that?
I don't want to close it.
I'm fine leaving it open and closing it on a specific date, like the Monday before our meeting or something like that.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I'm good. I mean, you know, it's, you know, my feeling is this gentleman applied. We haven't had other applicants, you know.
That's what I think.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know. But yeah, I mean, if we want to postpone, let's postpone. And
I mean, we can't interview for 2 weeks.
Yeah. All right.
Let's leave it up until the next meeting. And Mr. Gilliland, I'm sorry. Yeah. I apologize if I'm not.
99%.
Okay. Mr. Gilliland, thank you for being here and patiently waiting. If you could come to the next meeting, we would really appreciate it. Absolutely. And I appreciate you applying. You've been the only one for the last year. I think that says a lot. So, but if you could come to the next meeting, we would appreciate it.
And I did apply from the email.
Right.
And found it on the website. So it is out there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry. Thank you so much for applying.
Okay. Thank you. All right. All good?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Item number 6, land disturbance process review and discussion. Mr. Manager.
So as we continue to try and update and or professionalize and or digitize our processes, we come across things that we would like the board to consider changing. One of those items is our land disturbance permit process. So if y'all will oblige, I would like to ask Assistant City Manager Powell to come up and explain the proposal.
Sweet.
Hello.
Land
disturbance permits. I know you guys have been staying up late nights thinking about land disturbance permits. I've got 2 staff members that are phenomenal And as they've gotten into this over the course of the last year, both Lori and Kristen have really brought to our attention that we've got some, that we are struggling with both interpreting and executing the land disturbance permits in a way that works and addresses what they're supposed to do, which is to really help us address flooding issues, both as they impact our neighbors and as they impact our own system. And so part of the problem here is that the definition of our land disturbance is okay, but there are no thresholds. So it doesn't matter whether you do 1 inch or 5,000, you're really asking to do the same thing. And that's not clear. At one point in time, perhaps there was less need for a not as great a need for a land disturbance permit, but one of the things that we are seeing consistently in historic neighborhoods is that nobody ever, so you can build, see, up to 40%, put 40%, you can build up to 40% of your property or build out up to 40%. Nobody imagined that we would get so many people actually doing that. And so the impact of so many people doing that is that we're experiencing a lot of runoff, and we're not really handling that or addressing that within our early in the process within our land disturbance permit. So those are some of the problems that we're facing. We're trying to really address those. There are simple things that we could do, both to ask folks to do, and when we have, they've been willing to do that, but we're asking, not requiring, and we've had good success with that, but we're really kind of going out on a limb when we do that. So what we're really proposing is that we take the land disturbance permits and we put some thresholds. So we have a minor land disturbance permit and a major land disturbance. So if you're doing a little bit, so under 1,000, disturbing less than 1,000 square feet, we look at it, you fill out a land disturbance permit. There's some smaller things that you can do that are best practices that would address and help with runoff. This happened recently with a property. A driveway was getting replaced. We had them put in a drain, and it was miraculous. The neighbor said, oh my gosh, I had no idea what a difference it would make. So much so that she's taking the initiative on her own to put her own drain in. So we are seeing that, and when our neighbors are seeing what the results of those small things, they are making a real initiative to really help do that. But this allows us to catch it early in the process, not way down the road after things are already built and done. The second piece of that is that we currently, based on state legislation, require a stormwater management plan when you disturb 5,000 square feet or more. Almost no properties. I mean, you can tear a whole house down and you haven't hit that threshold. And so best practices and what we're seeing other communities do is they're setting that threshold at 1,000 square feet. So 1,000 or less, you do minor, and there's some minor things. 1,000 or more, you do a more significant land disturbance that includes a stormwater plan. And remember, the stormwater plan isn't that significant. It's silk fencing, it stops runoff during construction. Most of our minor things are for what happens after construction. Things that are more significant, a more significant one happens during and after, so that you're trying to stop the runoff that goes on into your neighbors during construction. So this is just an open discussion. This is what we're seeing. We think this would be best practices. This is what we're seeing in other communities. We think it would be prudent for in how we manage and handle these issues around land disturbance that would address the impacts on neighbors, many times unintended, but on impact on neighbors and on our own stormwater system, as we really struggle with a lot of these issues. So that's really the discussion.
thoughts, comments, or Patrick, how should I handle this?
Oh, I think you're handling it quite well.
Okay, so.
Well, I'd like to hear from everybody else. I have no questions about the suggestions themselves or the problems are solved, none of that. My question would only be like, what's next? But I think if
one thing at a time.
Yeah. So if anyone has any questions prior to that, yeah, because I do not.
Some questions.
Yes.
So thanks, Shannon. I think this is badly needed. Actually, something I've actually been talking about for a long time and hoping that we got to. So I'm so glad that we're starting to get a handle on this runoff from one neighbor to another and eventually into a street. But I do have a couple of questions. So you mentioned, I understand this is about thresholds, but what is the definition of a land disturbance? Is it because like a 1,000 square feet, anything like if someone's just doing new garden beds or something like that, would that be considered?
I mean,
it has to be deeper than that, right? Like with big equipment or something?
Yeah, I mean, you're coming in for a permit.
Okay.
I think there's an example that I'd given you. I mean, some ADUs even kind of fall below
but then
that.
What that's about, because I've seen situations where
people in driveways, that would be, those would be things that would be.
What about big landscape projects? Because I've seen situations there where people have, you know, they've been doing things to get it all the way down to the dirt, and then no erosion fences.
Yeah.
And then it rains and it goes right into the street and into the storm.
So what if you're resodding 2,000 square feet?
Or what if you're
never going to know?
What if you're plowing up? I mean, actually using large equipment to plow up, which is what I've seen.
Hey, Stephen.
Stephen.
That's for the legal definition of land disturbance.
Yeah. Looked at this every which way from Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of complicated. And part of the issue that we have here is that it's addressed in three different parts of the code and they don't use identical language. So like the most recent one that we did is the tree ordinance. And so the tree ordinance talked about earth moving equipment. I think a better way to look at it is what do we want the definition to be rather than what it is, because it's not clear. And the part of the goal here is to make it clear.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's problem number four then, right?
Okay.
And I guess it is built into problem one, but we can absolutely make it problem four.
And that would be consistent across all of the zoning ordinance?
It's actually not in the zoning ordinance. It's in the
code
of ordinances.
Okay.
So we need to work on that.
It would be consistent everywhere.
Yes, it'd be consistent, which we need. We need it to be the same.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's defined by whether the stormwater is triggered, which is currently at 5,000. I think, you know, the question you're asking is up for the legislative
decision. I've
just
seen some, like, it's not a building. It's a major, but it is a major land disturbance that creates erosion issues. So is there a way to enfold that into this?
We haven't put an ordinance together. Yep. So why don't we bring back and I'll work with Stephen and team and we'll define it. Is there any instructions or direction from you on that front? So the mayor just mentioned 2,000 square feet of sod probably isn't, I'm interpreting his comments that wouldn't fall into the category of needing a more significant land disturbance. But in your heads, is there something that is there a demarcation for these non-physical things?
I think part of it for me is the time of exposed soil. Because if you're just, you know, if you got a company coming in and they're doing their thing and then they put the sod over it, there's no issue,
right?
But if you've got somebody coming in and you've got a long period of time where rain events can occur, that's an issue.
Okay.
So I don't know.
I'm trying to think how you enforce that.
But we can talk about the definition a little more.
Around that.
Well, I just picked that one because when you resod your yard,
yeah,
I mean, you... any organic stuff is out. I mean, you take it down to the dirt, it's fully exposed. And if you're in the middle of a storm, your yard is now in the street.
Yes.
I can't really think of any others, but I mean, if you were mid, you know, if you had to put in some sort of retaining wall and you're mid construction and it's like,
if you put in a mid, but the retaining wall would certainly kick it in.
Yeah. But, seen that. I've seen the erosion fences on one that's going on, but okay. Here's a couple other quick questions. ADUs, are they, do we allow less than 500 and less than 1,000 square foot on them?
I mean, don't we can, yes.
500, right?
You can build bigger than 500, I think.
But I mean, would they kick in as a, would they be a minor?
It depends on how big they are.
Right. Okay. Like, because, you know, the actual footprint is one thing, but the building, the disturbance is another, right?
Yeah.
So that's, again, a question.
Would be on the plan. So we would, we would evaluate that based on the plan, and then you would get channelized depending on what you're doing.
Okay. And then the very last thing, the solution, I think what we're leading into here is possibly some solutions to prevent whatever additional stormwater that may be generated by these projects from just surging into the stormwater system. Is that correct?
Yeah. So already the stormwater master plan would make recommendations. I mean, within that, there are recommendations that help mitigate, slow, and manage some of that.
But this would be for whatever amount that people are adding onto their home, not the original structure.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions, and I'll get back together with you on some of those.
Hey, you know, that's what we're doing now. There are other ordinances and other communities that have taken it a step further and say you have to manage the first inch of water, or you know, inch of water or something akin to that on site. We haven't gone that far, and maybe we take that up next. I think we're trying to get to a place where we have an executable, fair, legitimate, and we're not guessing at which code to which part of the code. We have clear understanding of what we're trying to do. And we're addressing the worst of the problems.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. So yeah, the struggle of the definition, what's the trigger point, really is hard. And I know we've had conversations about when the mechanized equipment, the backhoe, the bobcat are brought on the site, that triggers it. And for me, that works pretty well. I'd like feedback on that. But concerns are, I would hate for anybody that's putting in a garden or a shrub bed or something to have to go through getting the permit. I don't want it to be that fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think we do either. Yeah. But I do think maybe when you are re-sodding, typically you are turning up the soil with pretty mechanized equipment. And, you know, maybe that if there ought to be a threshold size on that. But somehow, I'm not sure where that happens. I'm looking for your guidance. But that's kind of where my brain went when I started seeing this, as to where that line was crossed. I also have a concern, particularly in the historic district, where we had a lot of the drainage was designed to be handled in vegetative swales that were along the back, in particular, the backs of the property lines. And I'm really concerned about how
they disappear,
particularly when we start doing the accessory dwellings and storage sheds and things like that. If there's a way to protect that natural, it's not a natural drainage system because it was graded into the site when the city was laid out, but it was years ago, trees have grown up, fences have been built, those kinds of changes, but a way to identify those swales and have some way to protect them, because that has a lot of impact on our storm water issues that we're having today.
I appreciate that comment. We'll take that into consideration as we look at this. I mean, that hopefully would be part of the solution as a project is going through plan review.
You know, and it may mean that we need to map where those natural the vegetated drainage swells, you know, in the topo are, and figure out some way to protect them.
Let me think about it. I mean, at a minimum, we can ask that they be shown on a plan that's submitted.
The problem is when they go from one person's property, I had a owner contact me just a year or so ago to come out and look at their backyard where the neighbor had done construction. Everything had been approved on their part of the property, but they blocked this natural swell that was coming along the back property line. There really wasn't.
Well, those are the things we're trying to catch early in this process, and what we think is has been missed based on a series of other issues. So, Dee, I appreciate the comment. Let me take that back. Let us think about how all this comes together. You guys are asking the same kinds of questions that we are. Is where do you draw those lines? And nobody wants to be overly prescriptive, but we also need to protect the swales and make sure that we're not having we need to be able to address these on the front end, not on the back.
Right. Thank you for bringing this to us.
I'm going on to read a draft before commenting.
Sure.
Is there any specific case that brought this up?
We've had several over the last several months, actually. Mm-hmm. We had a driveway that was removed. In that situation, there wasn't a permit. They came back to get a permit, and then looking at what was happening, we saw that. And the neighbor was complaining because he took the driveway up, and all the mud was flowing over to the neighbor's house. And as we looked at it, we realized that a drain would not only did they need silt fencing in this situation, but a drain would also really help, and it did. So that was one example. But I think we've had at least three in the last few months where something akin to this has come up.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been struggling with what levers we had, how we could influence that as a staff, and recognizing that we felt like we were operating a little bit outside of what was clearly our role.
I appreciate the work you do in bringing this up, but I'll wait to see a draft and then comment. Thank you.
If you have questions, feel free to call me, and Lori and Kristen are equally or more adept in answering questions on this than I am.
Absolutely. Thank you.
What other parts of the ordinance does this affect? I mean, this kind of ties into tree ordinance a little bit. This possibly could tie into demolition permits. This ties into what else?
Stormwater.
All I would ask is that consistency, that it's just consistent, that it's logical, that if you were to diagram it with a flow chart, that it makes sense, that it doesn't lead to some other question. You know, what are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. You know, are you disturbing the land? Here's the definition, you know, that it all jives. That's all I would ask.
Well, we have a flow chart now, and as we get to the next ordinance, we'll bring the flow chart to you with the ordinance, and I'm not sure when we'll get to it because I'll need Stephen on the ordinance, but maybe by the next meeting.
So that was really the next question, is what's next? Is just
we'll prepare a draft ordinance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
Groovy. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys taking it to that.
Did you say Stephen will send that to us tomorrow?
The night. The box. Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna take him to dinner. So thank you. All right. So all good? Okay. Item number 7, DeKalb County lease of City Hall for November election. Mr. Manager.
It's quite self-explanatory.
No.
Yeah, the county requires BOMC approval to lease space in City Hall for the process of conducting the November election. So we will be bringing that matter to the next meeting for y'all to vote to approve.
Yeah, I read over the scope of work and it looks, like you said, self-explanatory.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did not.
That's okay.
At least, do they pay us for this?
No.
Oh, okay. I just saw the word lease.
Yeah.
Dude. We paid them.
Just asking.
We actually do.
No, but we are grateful that they do conduct the election rather than placing the burden on the municipalities, which would be heavy.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we will vote on this June 14th.
That's correct.
Okay. Just want to define the action. Okay. All right. Well, that concludes items for discussion.
Yes.
Everybody good? Okay. Public comment on the items we've discussed in the work session. Yes, Lida.
Hi. So I wanted to talk about the sanitation proposal. I went over that and I had concerns. And my first concern is that we're commingling parks information with sanitation fees, and sanitation being an enterprise fund, it should stand alone. And so we should be able to see exactly what the cost of sanitation fees are without commingling with the parks. That's muddying the waters. Okay, so that's my first point. The other thing is that the green space needs, whatever they are, can be discussed with the regular millage rate increases or decision on that. As far as looking at the three different fees, that schedule, I have a question as to why you would go from twice a week backyard pickup to once a week curbside, and the only savings is $34. And the other point on this particular one is that if you add in the millage rate at the bottom, item number two is actually more expensive when you factor in the millage rate. So millage rate shouldn't be a discussion in sanitation fees, bottom line. On option three, I have a question. This 409, so we're outsourcing under this scenario. And is this 409 including the sanitation and the leaf debris pickup to the resident? Is that the total cost, or is that the outsourcing cost and there'll be an additional cost for leaf pickup? So yeah, I'd like to know what.
Would y'all like me to address Ms. Stebbins?
So I would like to see that breakout and more specificity there. So on the FTE justification, it talks about annual leave and climate issues for, you know, shortages. But to me, these are ongoing things, especially sick leave. People have been calling out for sick leave forever and ever. They should already be factored in to the number of FTEs we need to do these services. So unless there was a dramatic increase recently, it really, you know, isn't to the point. I also don't think there's sufficient information on equipment needs for sanitation. I really was shocked that the picture that was used to show old equipment was something that was lying out in the yard covered in weeds. That looks like something that was thrown out past its useful life, or something that wasn't taken care of, one of the two. Another thing I want to address, it's kind of a secondary issue and it's not popular, but I think the raking the leaves to the street, grass clippings, light things, I think it's a bad practice. I think I've watched my neighbor just rake his leaves right into the street, you know, and what happens is these things, they don't get picked up the same day they get raked out there. So you get large winds, you get rain, these things blow back all over the city, they go down our stormwater drains, and you want to talk about some expensive repairs, it's in stormwater. So y'all know, we all kind of dealt with some stormwater costs, so I think you know that. But so these are some things that I think we need some more information and clarification on. And I really do think that it's very important that you separate out sanitation from parks and green space to see a clear picture of what we're talking about. And okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Well, you brought up a number of things, and I think we will need a little time to get back to you.
Okay.
Actually. Each of those questions were addressed in the presentation.
No,
yeah.
What? Don't do it.
Okay.
Don't take the bait.
All right. They absolutely were.
Okay. We will get back to you. Thank you. Okay. All right. Thank you, Lytle. Mm-hmm. All right. Other public comment? Yes, sir.
Yeah, going back to the spray painting, since I was the one 7 years to brought this whole thing up, I was never against not having spray painting. We came up with the chalk paint as a solution. Unfortunately, the group took it upon themselves to kind of mix in painting, permanent painting, in with it.
Right.
And then we kept on pushing, let's choose chalk. And then they would use chalk, but then they would come out in the still of the night, days after, and use permanent paint.
Mm-hmm.
And we have video of that. And video, I think Lisa knows about it from a Facebook page posted of them painting at night. So, with all due respect, I don't think we can trust them. They can't, they cannot, you know, govern themselves. So I'm afraid somebody might come back out at night.
Let me, I'll just jump right in. This is why I want a board member to be present. And I just want to tell you, I'm going to make it clear. If anybody does that, this is over. Okay? Fair is fair. All right? This has gotten out of control. We're asking for adults to be adults. If you want to go back in the middle of the night and be a whatever, you're screwing it up for everybody. I just want to make that clear. So that's why I want a board member. And I understand your concern. I'm concerned too. But fair is fair. You know, we'll buy the paint. We'll give you the paint. We'll lay out the rules. We'll supervise. If you really want to screw this up, we'll make it known that whoever does it, you screwed this up. We're never doing this again.
Yeah, I agree with the supervision. Tell us when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And make it known if somebody comes out at night, we heard the cost of permanent cleaning. If somebody happens to come out at night and do something like this, there has to be consequences. It's not just, hey, it'll happen next year.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we've seen what happens year after year. They do it. It never just goes away permanently. They do it next year. It's fresh. It never goes away. And you made a great point there, how the street looks great and how you have been an advocate for making, you know, bringing Avondale into the, you know, future and getting some of the older groups that didn't want to spend money and they made Avondale even more beautiful. And when I saw the paving going, you know, down, I thought it was like, this is heaven. And I thought to myself, 4th of July is coming up.
Like, yeah. No, I thought the same thing, honestly. And, you know, I was like, wow, I don't even want to put traffic striping on it, just leave it like it is, you know. But, you know, and it's, you know, this is not an ultimatum or anything. I just think, look, we're trying our best to make a compromise here. We're trying our best to meet you in the middle. Again, if someone wants to screw it up, it's on them.
I was for the compromise from the beginning. But
you, I appreciate you showing up every year and voicing your opinion, and I do appreciate that. I really do. And I get your point about the flags, and, you know, let's just get it back to what it was. It started out as stenciling stars.
It's permanent paint is what it really is.
And that's not great.
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, for the most part, I agree with you. The act of going out all ninja-like at night and spray painting, you know, the street, you know, it's not just, you know, it's kind of silly, but it's also kind of dangerous, you know. I'm in agreement with you. You know, I just think that, you know, we have a compromise.
Good.
I think if we can, you know, meet with the organizers at the table, yeah. I think
Jonathan just stated the consequence.
Good.
So,
I mean,
there is a consequence if someone does something. So, boom. That's it. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think we all get it at this point. So, let me just say, I will talk to the folks that normally, you know, kind of take this on and just, you know, I'll talk to them.
Do we know when it will be happening?
I mean, if it's chalk paint, it probably should happen the Sunday before the 4th, which is on a Tuesday, correct? So Sunday is July, and it's traditionally been on Sunday because there's less traffic and, you know, yada, yada. And so you get up at 8, you do it, you're done by 10. Fourth is a couple of days later. It works out kind of good this year. So it would be that I would propose that Sunday, July 4th, 8 o'clock.
Sunday,
July 4th. I mean, July 2nd. Sorry.
Weather permitting.
Yeah. Right. Because Monday morning, some people have the day off, some people don't. That's a terrible time. So, yeah, you're going to be dodging cars Monday morning. So it's best I can do. Yes, Mr. Hover.
Bill Hover, 89 Berkeley Road. It dawned on me that trying to supervise an event on something that's 3/4 mile long or so.
It starts at one and goes to the other.
Yeah. I'm wondering why this tradition needs to be put in the Clarendon corridor instead of maybe having it a little more concentrated in an area that could be better controlled. For instance, the wide street area between Avondale and South Avondale, that's not really a street, but it's a lot of pavement.
The reason it's on Clarendon, that's where the parade is. That's the whole point, is you're decorating the road prior to the parade.
Maybe make a little.
It's either on Clarendon or it's not. Okay. It's, then you're
expanding,
creating a whole new thing. And let's keep this in a direction that we can maybe control. Anyway, do we have any comments online?
Mel Hatfield.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Hatfield.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
Hey, same subject, Mel Hatfield, 77 Clarendon. And of course, I'm want to talk about the street painting. We've been here since 97. And as I remember, the year that the chalk paint was used, it was put down like a week or so before the 4th. And the rain washed it away. And one morning we got up and looked out, and boy, they've painted the street again. And when I looked down at the end of my driveway and saw a can of real spray paint, I said, uh-oh. And it was regular paint. So, I'm all for y'all trying to get this so that we don't get real paint on our beautiful Clarendon Avenue again. But just be very careful, because they'll come out in the stealth of night. And like a couple of other folks have said, they'll do whatever they dang well want to do if you're not careful. So, but I applaud you for trying to get this under control and for putting it on the agenda. And another thing, thank you for resurfacing the tennis courts, i.e. pickleball courts. They're wonderful now. So thanks for doing that.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the comment. Okay.
Stacy's hand is still up. So,
Stacy, did you?
Sorry, must have hit that by error. My bad.
Okay, all good. All right, any other comments out there? Okay. Seeing none, we're going to close public comment. We do have an item, an executive session item, and you probably know what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
We're not voting on anything, are we?
No.
So you can stay if you want to listen to us adjourn, but otherwise we're going to have to ask everyone to leave the room, please. Mm-hmm.